What's up, y'all? This is Victor Ung with the Badass Asian Dudes podcast, and this week we have on Nikhil Viswanathan. He is the CEO and co-founder of Alchemy, which is the world's leading blockchain developer platform. It powers over $7.5 billion in transactions in 99% of countries in the world. And it's backed by Stanford University, Coinbase, the Google chairman, the founders and execs of Charles Schwab, LinkedIn, PayPal, Yahoo, Dropbox, and even the New York Stock Exchange. Being honored on the Forbes 30 Under 30, he is obviously a badass with many career accomplishments. And we're excited to share his mindset and his story and how he created such an impactful platform. Before we get into it, a quick shout out from our sponsors, the first being Burner Lab. They created a new vape pen called Alpha. And if you're looking for a more reliable paraphernalia that's safer and discreet, go to Burner Lab, that's BRNRLAB.com, and enter the code BAD at checkout to get 15% off. Our second sponsor is Nero Mints and Gum. Refresh your state of mind with functional gum and mints that energize, calm, and focus you in the moment. Go to getnero.com and get 15% off with the code BAD15. The last sponsor is The Emotion Dojo, a virtual gym membership for the heart and souls of Asian men. If you've had your mixed culture or toxic masculinity impact how you manage and communicate your emotions, whether as a leader in the workplace or as a partner in your relationship, join the brotherhood of growth-minded, male-identifying Asians who are working on their emotional intelligence and fulfillment in life. This is not therapy, it's better. Learn more at bit.ly/emotiondojo and enter the code BADASS to get a 2-week free trial. All right, let's get into this episode with Nikhil Viswanathan of Alchemy.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Badass Asian Dudes podcast. I'm Michael Wu, one of the hosts and moderators of the Facebook group Badass Asian Dudes. I'm here with Sabo Shen.
Yo, 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 what's up, everyone?
As well as our guest today, esteemed guest, Nikhil Viswanathan. I know Nikhil from Stanford, from my Stanford startup days. Nikhil, would you like to introduce yourself for a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see where to start. Okay, so I grew up in Texas, came to California for college, really loved it, had a blast, studied computer science, artificial intelligence, came to, stayed in Silicon Valley after that, and then built out a few different companies with a bunch of different friends, and now we have a Bitcoin company, a cryptocurrency blockchain company called Alchemy that we do.
Yeah, awesome. So one of the first questions we always like to ask our guests is, what does a badass Asian dude mean to you? Actually, you are our first South Asian guest, but
yeah, South side.
Yeah, representation.
South side.
That's a good question. So one thing that's been really interesting to me is I think that, through college, I noticed, so I grew up in this small town in Texas that had basically no Indian people or no Asian people, which Indian was considered a subtype of Asian in Texas. When I came to California, I found out I wasn't Asian. Actually, that's a whole funny story I can share. But basically, one of the really cool things is, in college, I feel like there is almost like two types of people, either people who only hang out with Asian people or people who like don't hang out with any Asian people. And I had like a really nice mix of both, where I had a ton of my close friends are South Asian, East Asian, and then a ton of my friends are not. So I think when I hear badass Asian dude, of course I think of you guys first, but this is my second thought is, how do you live your best life possible and, be proud of who you are? And I think your culture is definitely a part of that. But I think I'm more ascribed to like, do badass things with your life and, be proud of the fact that you are Asian.
Awesome. I love that answer. I've been following your guys' journey ever since back in the day from Down to Lunch and on. Honestly, I thought you guys were just going to ride with Down to Lunch all the way to success. And I was just curious, What led to that pivot to alchemy? And I'm just curious about kind of any struggles that you and Joe faced then.
Hey, before we jump into that, I just learned about Down to Lunch today. I'm 43, so, you know, like was in college having lunch with people. But, you know, like for the people that are just listening that might not know what Down to Lunch is, I think they need to know what your first creation was and the awesome story that happened, because when I was reading it, I was like smiling and laughing so much, not at your expense, but I was just like, oh shit, like this went from just having people join up to, you know, becoming a whole kind of like Pizzagate type thing, right? So could you give a little bit of story about Down to Lunch and how that led into alchemy?
Absolutely. So let me give you a little bit of back history, actually, kind of how the evolution of that whole product line came out and kind of my journey post-college. So in college, I studied computer science and artificial intelligence, machine learning. I loved it. It was super, super fun. Had a blast. I think that one of the best things that Stanford does is really create this amazing freshman dorm community where still, like, you know, my freshman dorm mates are still some of my best friends to this day, right? And you know, through college, I had so many amazing, amazing, amazing experiences. Like every year I was like, this is the best year of my life. And it just got better and better and better. And it was such an amazing, amazing time purely because of that community experience in college. And graduating, I had actually, it's funny, I always knew I wanted to do technology and startups, and I totally randomly ended up working at big companies. I did product management at Facebook, Google, Microsoft, my summers in college. And then we started one company, one summer. So after graduating, I didn't apply to any jobs. I had a bunch of like random offers. Mark, at Facebook was like, hey, come run this team. And it was compelling, but I really just wanted to see if I could have a big impact myself. And I think when I think about my life, right, you think about anyone's life, you only have one shot at life. You don't get multiple chances, religion, reincarnation aside, right? So how do you have that big impact? How do you have that home run and really knock it out of the park, right? And so for me, the way I think about my life and impact is on these two axes. So your x-axis is how many people's lives do you touch, and your y-axis is how deeply do you impact their life every day? And it's so like number of people times depth of impact, right? And for me, when I think about that x-axis, it was always obvious to me. Never before in human history could I do this on a magic metal box and build something that every person on the planet uses, right? But now we have software, we have the internet. And really that only happened in the last like 20 years, right? If you think about life before the previous 20 years, the major forces that shaped our world today were government, were religion, were countries, right? And now that's no longer the case. It's really, you know, software companies. You think about Apple, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, like these companies have a bigger impact, you know, arguably that on have impact on every person's life on the planet. And that's insane, right? And when you think about that, it's such an exciting opportunity because these companies have go super, super, super quickly and have massive impact. So when I thought about my life, and then the y-axis is like, how do you like really have massive impact on a daily basis for kind of like deep impact on a personal level, right? And I'd gone through this like pretty rough time where I was just like really lonely post-college, missed all my friends, and really just wanted to make it feel like you lived with your friends again, right? I had gone through this like pretty rough period, and I thought about my life, and I was like, what is the number one thing that determines your happiness on a daily basis? It's the people you're around, right? It's like I was 6 months out of college, one block away from campus, happiness had gone from here to here. And one of the things that I realized was, you know, the number one thing that determines your life on a daily basis, the happiness on a daily basis, the people around. And I said, what if you could make it feel like that freshman dorm experience again? And that was the goal, right? And everyone said, that's not possible, but that would be the best thing ever. My mom always says, as soon as someone says it's not possible, you'll go do it. So basically, we set on this quest to make it feel like you lived with your friends. And I was like, you know, and when I think about those two axes, if I really bring happiness to people's daily lives, and I can do that at scale for every person on the planet, and that's something I usually don't say, but it's what I believe, you know, we have this massive opportunity, that would be awesome. Turns out it's way harder than we thought. Joe and I spent, you know, 4 years building a bunch of different products. We built this one, nothing really worked. We built this one app called Down to Lunch. We thought no one would use it. We thought it'd just be our friends, like two or three of our friends who lived on our street. Ends up being, you know, we put it on the App Store, ends up being millions of people around the world, front page of New York Times, number one at social app in the world. It was kind of crazy. We actually like literally broke iMessage because we put our phone number in there, started getting 10,000 text messages a day. We find out we're one of the top 10 iMessage users in the world. We have more texts than Justin Bieber. We had to email the CEO of Apple to come fix our phones. It was this whole crazy story. Really, and to get back to your original question, the thing that really, which was awesome, that product was going well, it was super exciting. The thing that really changed our perspective was when we saw the big shifts in technology. There's a computer, then there's the internet, and now there's blockchain. And really we saw like, wow, if this is the next shift in technology, now is the time when, you know, 1997. So Microsoft and Apple were started in 1976 and 1977. Sorry, 1975, 1977. Google and Amazon were, Google was 1997, Amazon was 1995. And then every 20 years, roughly, you have like this big shift. And, you know, we started Alchemy in 2017 because we thought we could build a platform that really powers that new wave of technology. So that's kind of a long and then like a short answer at the end to what, how we transitioned.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, one thing that I heard a lot was, you know, you were really kind of talking about, you wanted to create apps that would, you know, really help people have like a sense of happiness. You know, I was curious, you know, what are the things that bring you a lot of joy and happiness to your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a few things in my life. It's funny, my friends describe me as like a golden retriever or like a black lab. I'm like very basic in my happiness. I want to be outside, running around, physical exercise. That's a huge kind of like, it's almost like my meditation. The other thing is just being around, I mean, why we built this product, right? Being around friends. Like, I think those two things are, and sorry, three things. One, the physical exercise, being outdoors. And I really love being by the beach. Number two, friends and really friends, family, and having that kind of really tight kinship. And then third is actually, I really, really, really love building things that make other people's lives better and really bring joy and happiness to people's lives. That to me is like ultimate satisfaction. So any or all of those three things.
That's really cool. You know, what I heard was you love building community, things that help a lot of people, help them interact as well. And, you know, Michael sent me a really cool article this morning. It was your sister, you know, like, yeah, you know, like I'm curious, you know, you guys grew up in Texas. You guys are obviously a very high achieving family. You know, was this, you know, like being founders, was that something like that your parents talked about, you know, and that instilled in your sister and yourself? Or where did you guys kind of find this motivation to be such high performers?
Yeah. So there's kind of like two questions there, like high performers and flattered, thank you. And the startups thing. And so my mom actually started a software company while we were growing up. So we kind of got to see the evolution of that from, you know, the very early days through the really, you know, pretty cool different phases of a startup's journey. So that was kind of like from our middle school childhood age, because she was an accountant at a bunch of the big firms before. She quit work to raise us and then went back to school and then started this tech company. So I think that's where, and you know, so from that, had computers around an early age, really loved it, played a lot of video games, did some programming, and you know, was hooked from there.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Michael also told me you're quite the athlete as well. I'm curious, you know, like, you know, as a fellow founder as well, although I don't know Mark Zuckerberg, I couldn't just call him Mark told me to start a team. You know, I do understand that, you know, on the surface when we're being interviewed, you know, we're always putting our best foot forward. You know, we're representing our brands, we're representing our companies. But, you know, a lot of things that people have been doing recently is instead of taking antidepressants, they're exercising more. Whenever I see other founders that exercise a lot, like I kind of assume, oh, wow, this is kind of like a way for them to regulate like their own mental health. You know, I'm curious, can you share some stories of like, you know, some of the biggest struggles that you went through either with Down to Lunch or with your new startup now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, it's a startup, so there's like infinite struggles all the time. But I think it's really just like a matter of perspective on how you look at that. It's really just like an opportunity for growth. And I think for me, like physical fitness has really just been a grounding part of my life since a very young age. I grew up playing every single sport: swimming, tennis, basketball, football, soccer, t-ball. And you know, I played tennis pretty seriously growing up. In college, we play a lot of ultimate frisbee, like full tackle football, basically like you name it, I played it, right? And I think that I used to just be very active, like my summers in high school and in elementary in 10th and 9th grade, you know, sorry, 10 years old, 11 years old was spent, this was Texas, it wasn't Palo Alto. I was not going to like SAT tutoring camps and stuff like that, right? I was going to like archery camp and basketball camp. And I would spend like 8 hours a day playing tennis in 100 degree weather. So that was my summers, right? And I absolutely loved it. And I think for me, I've carried that throughout. And it's funny because like during the pandemic, funny story, I came to San Diego for a week with friends at a beach house, and SF was, you know, this is when San Francisco has been on fire. In the previous couple of years, I got pretty sick with the smoke, which is actually really bad for you, by the way, for those of you in California. And I decided to stay a couple extra days in San Diego. I was like, you know, I'll just wait till the fire clears out. Of course, the fire didn't clear out. So, you know, one day turned into 2 days, turned into a week, turned into 2 weeks, turned into 3 weeks. And then we kind of changed our work from home policy to extend it out a little bit. So I actually just spontaneously moved. I didn't even go back. I just had my rolly suitcase. I didn't even go back to get my place in San Francisco. I just stayed here. But for me, and I think a lot of like founder friends and just friends in general, exercise and being outdoors is just, you know, humans were meant to connect to the ground. There's actually a lot of science around this. Like even just walking barefoot on grass, like the grounding negative ions, or I'm going to get the science completely wrong. So like I'm an engineer, not a scientist. So basically like you're able to just like, you know, something with the ions and like grounding it on earth, like
exactly.
Literally you feel completely different. So yeah, for me, that's a huge part of my life.
I'm standing on a patch of grass right here below my desk so I could be grounded. You know how we Silicon Valley people do. And so, you know what? You had also mentioned that you grew up in a place without a lot of Southeast Asians or Asians in general, you know. And you also said you loved it. You know, I'm curious, you know, mm-hmm. how was your upbringing? And when you finally moved to, you went to Stanford, correct? So I'm assuming tons of Asians there. So, you know, how was it like growing up? And was there any culture shock when you left for California?
Yeah. So there was, but not in the way that you would expect. So it was, I don't know if it was shock, but it was some interesting experiences. I'll share a couple of stories. So, you know, growing up in Texas, out of my high school of like, you know, probably 3,000 kids, I went to this school where it was like pretty rough school. You know, there was like metal detectors, like fights, like drug deals. Like it was like people get arrested. That was like fairly common. Right. So, you know, out of 3,000 kids, I'd say like 40% of the school was Black, 40% was Mexican, 20% was white. You know, maybe there were like 6 Indian kids, maybe 7. And this was in like our high school with 10th, 11th, 12th. So maybe like two or three Chinese kids, you know, 1 Korean kid, 1 Japanese kid. So we were all like Asian brothers. Like, you know, there just wasn't enough of us to have politics internally, but even like, it just, you know, I feel like race just like wasn't that big of a deal. Like I know I can imagine everyone's like perception of Texas, but no one really talked about it. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't something that we like people like you felt discriminated or anything against. And I'm guessing most people just thought I was Black or Mexican. I do get that like a fair amount. And the interesting thing was when I came to California, I remember move-in day when you have we went to California and we went to go to this place and I'd never been there before. And it had everything in massive quantities. I never heard of this. It was like, you know, you could buy toothbrushes in like 20 packs and toothpaste in like 15 packs. And everyone was Asian, like East Asian or Indian. And it is called Costco, right? So I'd never heard of Costco before. So we went to Costco. Oh, there was also this thing where, you know, our town was so small that if you saw like another Indian person or like Asian person in the supermarket, you'd be like, oh my God, you must be new to town. Like, welcome. You get really excited. You know, like show them around. You literally would just go like invite them to your house and like whatever, right? So, and like have dinner with them. So when I went here, I was like, oh my God, there's so many like East Asian and South Asian people. Like, I need to go say hi to everyone. I was like, why is no one excited to see me here? And so we went there. Anyway, so like move-in day happens. We're moving in and people are like, wow, we admire your commitment to oral hygiene. Cause I had like 2 giant jugs of Listerine, 15 toothpaste, like 10 toothbrushes, like all these things, like 5 packs of floss. And I was like, yeah, it's great. There's a place called like Costco. And they're like, yeah, we've heard of Costco. But the funny thing was we went to this Asian American Big Sib, Little Sib program at Stanford. And I walk in the first day and it's me and one of my other friends who's like half brown, Ben. And I think there's one of our other friends there and everyone else is like East Asian. And to me, I was like, we were confused. We're like, hey, where are all the brown people? And they're like, yeah, this is the Asian one. I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm here. Cause in Texas, you know, Indian people are considered Asian. So, and they're like, no, this is the Asian one. And I was like, yeah, so I'm here. They're like, no, you're not Asian. I was like, what do you mean I'm not Asian? So it was like a super funny experience. But then I found out in California we're still considered Asian. We're just like the South side. So, and it's interesting because in Texas, there just wasn't enough even enough people to like split into like segments. So it's like, we're all just lumped under Asian. So
yeah, I've noticed how people band together depends on really the proportion of people around you. And honestly, mm-hmm. I love Costco. I go to Costco all the time, all around the world. It's my favorite place ever.
It's so great.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, what do you, given what you said, what do you feel about your role in representation for any kind of Asian, or I guess we have a pretty liberal definition of Asian, at Baddest Asian Dude. So
yeah. Oh, and I don't mean that in any negative way. I just thought it was funny to think, you know, I think I just try to live my best life, and hopefully, you know, I mentor and coach a bunch of people who are kind of up and coming in whatever field. But one of the really cool things I really liked about growing up in Texas was, again, back to this thing where race was like never a divisive thing, and it was very open, and like everyone was friends. And I think even through my experiences in college, that was a really awesome experience. And I think I in terms of leadership, and in terms of kind of, you know, inspiring the younger generation, which I don't know if I do or not, but I try to live my life like as if role modeled off the people that I look up to, and live in the best way possible to inspire other people to do the same.
That's pretty awesome. So, hey, you know, like we've interviewed a lot of founders on this show, you know, a lot of really high performing, you know, lots of accolades. And one of the things that we're really trying to do with Badass Asian Dudes is to really show that, you know, Asian men, we're not just engineers. We're not just, you know, technical whizzes. You know, we're also emotional. We could be romantic. We could be passionate, things of that nature. So, you know, one of the things that we wanted to do on this show is, you know, really get to know the founder. And what we're going to do here is I'm going to give you a couple prompts. They're just open-ended prompts.
Totally.
And I want you to finish them.
All right.
Game for that?
Let's do it.
All right. 100%. All right. So, Yes. I knew you'd be up for this. I was like, you know, I'm not going to say you're a very good talker. I find myself like really into your story. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun here. All right.
The first
one, Nikhil, is what scares me most in life is
not reaching my full potential. Do you want me to elaborate, or should I just, is this?
Yes. Yeah.
I think everybody in the world has so much potential, and for me, one of the coolest things is seeing people achieve greatness in whatever way they define it, right? And that doesn't necessarily need to be making a lot of money or being quote successful in terms of society, but I think seeing people have a goal and have a purpose in their life and really achieve that is super cool to me. And I think when I think about my fears, my greatest fear is like, you know, am I doing things that I know are not good for me, or know will not make me reach my full potential. And because I feel like I have all this opportunity. I see, like, you know, my parents came from like nothing, and now they built this awesome life, and now I have like a really great kind of platform to start at. So I should be able to do a lot of great stuff.
Awesome. All right. I love that answer. Okay. The second one. One skill I wish I learned when I was younger is...
discipline. That has been a tough one for me. I'm very like externally driven and externally disciplined, in the sense like if I have a deadline or if I need to get something done, you know, it will be 11:59 sometimes or all the time, but like if it's due at midnight, but it will get done, right? And I think that one of the most difficult things, both about being in college, you know, so I went to this really easy high school. We didn't have really homework. You know, I did all my homework in passing period between the classes, and I came to Stanford, and it was, you know, people who went to Exeter and Andover and just knew how these like prep schools and like knew how to come back and sit down and study. And I just hung out all the time till 5 a.m. with all my friends, right? Which was great. I don't really regret that. But I think especially doing a startup, no one is telling you what to do. Your investor's not telling you what to do. Your team's not telling you what to do. It's like, you have to be very extremely disciplined. And I think that's some of the, you know, most successful people that I know and kind of like see in the world are extremely disciplined. And that's something that is a constant evolution and constant growth for me.
Yeah. I love these answers. That answer about potential really resonated with me, but I think it's also important to like realize that everyone takes their own path to their full potential, and it's, you shouldn't beat yourself up if you're like a little slower to get there, or it's not exactly what you imagine, as long as you're definitely trying your best all the time, or even taking rests when you need to.
Totally.
Yeah. And you know, this discipline answer, it was probably the last thing I was thinking was going to come out of your mouth.
Because, really?
Well, I mean, you've been able to do so well. I mean, you could call Mark by his first name, which, you know, not many people can. And, you know, what's interesting about this is it's like, okay, my follow-up question is, how would your life look different if you were more disciplined?
A lot of things. I think I would, I think, I'm not saying I'm not disciplined at all, but I think, you know, I think the important things that discipline really teaches you is one of the biggest things is reducing your stress, because if you're disciplined, then you can schedule out your time and you can get things done. And one of the things that I found as I become more disciplined is the amount of stress and the ability for me to take care of my body and my mind has hugely increased with the more discipline I have, right? I think especially in the early days of the startup, there were times when, you know, there's one time when, you know, the app was blowing up, you know, we're at the top of the app store, we're doubling our user base like every day. And Joe and I literally didn't leave our apartment for, I think, 6 days in a row. There was one time when I was just like, I'm so stressed. Like, I need to go outside and go on a run. And we were working 9 to 5, 9 a.m. to 5 a.m. the next day, like literally 20-hour days. And it was so awesome. Like, we were just like, this is awesome. We're having the time of our life. We weren't like stressed. Like, you know, we weren't like, oh man, I need to do this work. We were like, oh, we're so amped. This is so fun. I don't even feel like I want to go to bed, but I should. Look, my phone's like, we've been up for 20 hours working straight. But it's more of like the physical stress you put on your body for not eating, not sleeping, you know, not exercising for 6 days straight. I walked outside and I was like, it was Thursday. And I was like, when did I go out last? And it was like, I think Monday or Sunday, the previous week. So it was a long time. So I think being disciplined now, you know, you realize that everyone says it's a marathon, not a sprint. I mean, in reality, it's a marathon where you're like basically sprinting, but you do want to kind of make sure you take time for all the other aspects of your life.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. All right. This next one's a little bit tougher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If people really knew me, they would know.
If people really knew me, they would know that what I say is basically what I think, and I don't really have a filter, which is, you know, good and bad. I don't have a filter, and I say 99.999% time. Actually, I can't think of a time when I don't really say what I think, unless it's I don't want to hurt someone's feelings, so I'm trying to be nice to them. But I have no filter. I'm very open. I will tell, you know, any person I randomly meet, like, if I'm happy to share really anything about me. So, and I think, yeah, I think that's very different. I thought everyone, you know, you go through life thinking that everyone is like you. At least I did. So, and kind of like, you know, meta in that. Maybe that's not true. But that's what I realized later on, that I had this impression that everyone was like me. And then later on, I would meet people, and then I'd tell them stuff, and they asked me stuff, and I asked them questions like, oh, you know, that's too personal. I would never share that. And I've like never had that thought kind of like cross my mind ever. So I think that's something that people really knew me inside. They'd be like, oh, I actually do know Nikhil.
Mm-hmm. So I like that answer, but I would say, well, if people really knew you, they would know Nikhil is very blunt and straightforward. So I want to hear something a bit more vulnerable than that. Let's take it a second time.
Give me an example, like, or can you rephrase the question again?
Yeah, absolutely. Here, I'll give you an example with myself. Okay, so if people really knew me, they would know that despite having 6 straight successful exits, I'm still a very insecure person. Mm. And I want a 7th exit, and that's going to make me feel secure.
That help? Nice. Oh, yeah. So some kind of vulnerability. Yeah. I think that if you know, one thing is like, I'm definitely very much a perfectionist, and that's something that I've had to rip out of me over the years, right? And I want to win at everything, even if it's a small thing. Like, I have to win. And I think, to me, one of the big things about, you know, having a mental and emotional mental and emotional not meditation, but kind of like a more relaxing mindset throughout my like kind of day-to-day life is like letting go a little bit of that and knowing that, hey, it's okay. Like, this is a startup, stuff will go wrong, and it's not even going wrong. It's a learning opportunity, right? So I think that transition for me from being that intense, insanely competitive person on every single tiny thing to, hey, let's treat this as like a learning opportunity and figure out how we can grow and improve from it. That was a pretty big shift for me.
Okay. Awesome. I love that. Yeah. I love that. You know, I mean, being a perfectionist is a double-edged sword, right? You know, there are,
I think it's actually really bad. I think it's a really bad thing. I think in general, like, one of the things, you know, I tell our new employees, and one thing that I've probably, one of the biggest lessons I've learned as a startup is I have to rip that perfectionism out of me, and it is not a good thing. It's like this excuse that we tell ourselves that, oh, I'm a perfectionist, but really it's just like, I'm not disciplined and are not disciplined enough, or I need to get more disciplined. Right. And I need to just be fine letting go, because perfectionism is a fear that your work may not be good enough. Right. And it's just letting go of that and saying, you know what, I gave my best effort and that's great. And that's all I need to do. So.
Yeah. All right.
Beating yourself up unnecessarily and, kind of like stopping you from moving forward, even though you think, oh, because I'm perfectionist, I'm going to put out the best thing ever. No, you've just got to work as hard as you can and
and
be okay with that. Yeah.
Yep.
I wanted to hear, how did you and Joe get through, deal with any struggles that came up when going through that whole process? sounds like health.
Yeah. It was great. I mean, honestly, like one of the, I think I tell this to all founders that we mentor and coach, but I would say like the single best thing I've done at the company is get to work with Joe. And I think we lived together for 5 years. Joe's my co-founder. We've lived together for 5 years. You know, we've never had an argument. Like, we get along super, super well. And he's like such an awesome, like even keeled person. I think we like balance each other out in a lot of ways. We're actually very similar in a bunch of ways. And we're very similar in a lot of ways. And we do have like, we are slightly different in some ways, but I think in general, you know, it's just been a blast. Like I feel super fortunate to get to work with people I love every single day. Like, so many people on our team are like my best friends. I absolutely love them. And I feel so fortunate that they would choose to put their, you know, life in career, like in, you know, working with us. They have options. They can literally do anything, work anywhere. We very fortunate to have some of the best people in the world. And I don't say that in kind of a cliche way. I actually mean that. And one of the things that is constantly, you know, really made the experience every second enjoyable, even the stressful parts, it's like a blast, because number one, I get to do what I love. Number two, I get to work on really cool problems, like with, and really cool opportunities with people who are just a blast to be around. They're super fun. They like, we joke around all the time. We still do things like shower at Stanford. They have this tradition of throwing in the shower on your birthday. We still do that in the office. Like, people like dunk each other in the sink. And it's just super, super fun. My friends who watch my Instagram stories, you know, Michael knows, everyone's like, do you guys even work? I'm like, yeah, we work all the time, but it's like, it still feels like you're in college. So I think that has definitely been the key. Work on what I love with people I love. And one question I always ask people when we interview them is what would you do if you had infinite time and money? And what would you like? And I would say, for me, the answer is I would do exactly what I'm doing now, except I'd buy all my friends' companies and we'd all move onto the same street and like live in one giant dorm complex, right? And that was what we were trying to sell with our product. So I would literally do what I was doing, what I'm doing for free. I basically am doing it for free. Like, you know, first several years, we didn't take salary, and then you pay yourself like nothing for several years. And so, you know, very, very grateful for this journey and for the awesome people I'm around.
Yeah, yeah. So that's awesome. I mean, I feel the same way about a lot of my coworkers. Well, maybe not exactly the same way as you. There's a one or two that we don't get along that well, but he knows who it is. If you're listening, you know who I'm talking about. But, you know, what I wanted to ask you was just to dig a little bit deeper into Michael's question, which is, you know, like, he was talking about tough times, and you kind of rephrased it like, hey, you know, we work with a bunch of cool people, so we actually don't have that many tough times. But what is one of the darkest moments, you know, as an entrepreneur that you had, and how did you recover from it? And mine for me was, you know, we were 2 months away from not making payroll. Yeah. I was acting like everything was okay.
Yeah.
And then finally I got honest and I was like, things aren't okay. I have 2 months of payroll. And then someone goes, hey, I know an investor. And then 2 weeks later, we had 2 years of run rate, you know? So nice. I was curious, did you have awesome. Any of these like, oh shit moments where you were like, yeah. okay, I can't outthink my way out of this. I need to yeah. use some emotional intelligence, or I need to get vulnerable and just ask yeah. for help.
Yeah. I mean, of course, like this is a startup. There's like all of those. Right. And I mean, we've been very lucky on the cash side. We've always been very well, we've had always had like a really long runway. We've never gone out to raise money. It's always been mostly inbound. So one, I mean, you know, so many stories, right? One of the things that really stuck out to me was we built this app, like number one app in the app store. Suddenly we see this, we're sitting there one night and we see this like tweet. Someone's like, oh, like if you get this app, you'll get kidnapped. And we're like, oh, ha, like, you know, this, we're like, that's random. Like who would write this? Like clearly a fake article. Cause at the time you literally couldn't even use the app with anyone who wasn't your friend. Cause it didn't even, you couldn't even add friends. You could only do it with your existing friends. Right. So unless you like knew them, you had your phone number and all this stuff. So we're like, clearly this is a fake thing, like whatever. And we thought it was funny. And we saw it kind of spreading. We're actually having a happy hour at our apartment that night. So Cameron Titleman, one of our mutual friends, was like at our apartment. We were sitting there and looking at this. And, you know, we were like, oh yeah, that's kind of weird. But, you know, Snapchat had people being like, oh, like it was like all this like scandals and stuff saying people are sending nudes and stuff like that. So we're like, you know, whatever. Like if people are tweeting about it, that's good. More people are tweeting about it. Next morning we woke up, it was crazy. Like our traffic was like this. It was like up and to the right and there's like instant wall. It's like immediately. And it was insane. Like literally everyone deleted the app and stopped downloading it like in like span of 12 hours. We were like, what the fuck happened? This is, sorry, I don't know if to say that. We were like, what the heck happened? You know, this is insane. I was like, this is insane. I cannot believe this. And it was crazy, like literally. So it turns out that this was like a coordinated, you know, smear campaign, and we were not the first company that it happened to. It happened to like other companies also. So, and it actually is not that expensive to execute. So anyway, what happened was for like years, we literally had to like rebrand the product essentially, because for years, like people literally had heard, it was crazy. Like literally like small towns in Texas had police departments that were like doing videos being like, okay, this app is actually safe to use. And it's not like literally, I think like the Midland Police Department had a video being like, hey, we've investigated this app. It's totally safe to use. And that was just like a fake rumor. I was like, this is insane. Like that people around the world are like kind of thinking about our down to lunch and telling people it's safe. The fact that it even spread that way. And I remember for like years, you know, when I was single, the dating apps I'd open and people would be like, whoa, down to lunch. Like, what was all that kidnapping stuff? And I was like, this is so crazy that, you know, turns out people like sending nudes is like good press and kidnapping is not. So, and it was, and the crazy part was like, it was so odd. Like we just thought, we were like, this is so ridiculous that like no one will ever believe it. Cause anybody who uses the app knows that it's literally not even possible. Right. And it was just, yeah, people believed it. So it was pretty crazy. So that was such a wild ride. And yeah, it was, imagine being on the top of the app store and then the next day, like, literally everyone deleted it. I have a picture of the growth graphs as well.
Oh man. Well, I guess the moral of the story is if a scandal breaks out, you and your co-founder need to start sending out some nude photos to take the attention away.
Yeah, that's definitely the answer.
Nikhil and Joe's nude calendar or something like that. Yeah. I want to ask one more thing.
Yeah.
You guys definitely have some high profile investors.
Yeah.
Carl Schwab, John Hennessy. Yeah. How do you have the confidence to approach these guys and be like, hey, believe in us? Or just in general, like,
yeah,
hey, believe in me, believe in our team. How do you have the confidence to do that?
Absolutely. So I think there's a two-part answer. So one is, I think there's actually a three-part answer. One is we didn't actually approach anyone. They all approached us and wanted to invest. So it was a little different, whether it was, you know, Charles Schwab or, you know, John Hennessy, who was a chairman of board at Google and president of Stanford and stuff. So it was all kind of like inbound or through intros or whatever. The second thing is, you know, I realized just like a lot of these people, all these people, you know, when I was at Google, I had meetings with Larry and Sergey, and at Facebook, there was one desk, Mark, and that was my desk. And I, at Microsoft, you know, I ended up meeting and hanging out with the CEO and like bringing him to Stanford to come speak. So I just really, you know, I was just weirdly like, I grew up in this small town. I was just not intimidated. I didn't know any of these. I didn't even know that they were legit. I mean, I knew they were the CEOs of companies, but I just wasn't intimidated. I don't know. I don't know how to say that. And I think the coolest thing is they're just normal people and they're, you know, very smart and extremely hardworking and very driven, but the main thing is that they're just so like caring and supportive. And literally John Hennessy, if I email him, he or text him or call him within 45 seconds, he will respond. I feel bad because I'm like, you know, I don't respond sometimes for a day or 2 days or whatever. But I think the thing is they're just so willing to help kind of the next generation of people that I was blown away. And I think and we're just super, super grateful for them. And one of the cool things we've done is, you know, most times when you get kind of high profile investors, you don't get to actually talk to them, and you get their admin kind of emailing you for whatever, right? So for us, we didn't need cash. And we said, look, you're coming to us. We don't really need investors, and we don't really want investors, but we want mentors and coaches, and we want a personal relationship with you. We'll text you, we'll call you, we'll email you anytime, and we want that kind of relationship. And they're like, all right, we're down. They're like, we've never done this before, but like, that's cool, let's do it. So I mostly think of them as personal mentors. And I think the last thing I would say is, I thought about this a lot. You know, when you grow up in a small town, you have like a different experience of life, right? And you know, if you look at Palo Alto, or I thought it was like, you know, do I want my kids, if I want to have kids, to grow up in Palo Alto? And it's such a crazy experience. It's ultra competitive. You know, people are like, you have SAT tutoring starting like third grade. I don't know if it's actually third grade, but somewhere around there. And it's just so competitive in every aspect, right? And everyone wants to go to Stanford and whatever, right? So, you know, growing up in Texas, it was 50% of my high school didn't go to college. Like, college was like not a thing. And if you did, it was like community college or whatever, or like the local school. So it just wasn't stressful. It was like very relaxing. It's very easy. And the second thing was, you have the opportunity to be a big fish in a small pond. And I think that's incredibly valuable, because at least in my opinion, life, right? I think the two most important things in life are ultimate confidence in yourself and persistence. And if you have those two things, like you can get most everything else. And I think that for me, growing up in a small town, you know, I was able to be the best at academics and the best at athletics and the best at music and have a lot of friends and hang out with everyone and street race my cars and jump off bike ramps in summer, right? And it's just, you can't do that in a big city because there's so much competition. And I think that instilled in me from a very young age that, you know what, I and anybody else, if you really want to, you can be great at whatever you want. So I think carrying that belief through my life has been a really, really, really kind of core part of my identity and a really powerful part of kind of what makes me right now.
Sweet. I mean, yeah, I've definitely been inspired by your story. I mean, following you and being your friend and whatnot. So what's something that you personally don't have an answer to right now and that you're looking to figure out?
Let's see. I have a lot of those questions. One, how do we hire like 5 more engineers? So please introduce me to them. Number 2, the big question I have is, when is our office freaking reopening in San Francisco? Because, you know, startup is all about the family and we want to get everyone back. I think for me, one thing that I kind of on like a more personal, deeper level in terms of like answers is, as I go through my life, how do I balance spending a lot of time in work? And also making sure that the other areas of my life are really fulfilled, right? In terms of like relationship and friends. And I think especially in COVID, that's a much more difficult challenge. So how do I balance all those areas? And what are the shifts? Because at each phase in your life, you kind of have a different ratio or balance of those different areas. And how do you be most effective and deliberate in creating amazing opportunities that enrich you in each of those areas in kind of as efficient time as possible? So it's something that I've constantly thought about over the years. And it's something that is a big focus for me right now, as I can kind of like plan on my life for the next year or 2 years.
Sweet. Love that. I definitely have those thoughts as well. So, but you know, cool. Yeah.
So is there any like last words? You know, we're kind of getting to the top of the hour, you know, like, if there was something you could tell a younger Nikhil, or just something that you wanted to say to our audience, you know, we want to open up the floor for you to just kind of freestyle, you know, whatever you feel from straight from your heart.
Absolutely. So probably like kind of thinking back to the talks at Stanford that I've given to both founders in engineering and the business school, I think the main thing that I kind of see and with people kind of a little bit younger than me and a little bit older than me, I think two things. One is, I'll say three things. One is, really think about what you want for your life, right? I think so many people go through life and just saying, you know, I don't know, but I'll figure it out, which is fine. I think that's totally one way to go through life. But I've seen the people who typically have the most happiness are pretty deliberate about, hey, you know what? This is what I think I want. And it may change and I may be wrong, but it is a direction I want to go in. And I think as you go to kind of a lot of the top schools, you have this kind of intellectual desire of like, my objective is to learn. And I think that's fine. And I think that if you make that your objective, that's great. But I think just really choosing something and saying, hey, this is what I want to do in life. And this is what gives me happiness, and knowing that. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing is really make sure you enjoy the process, right? The people I've talked to who are the happiest and the most successful, honestly, are people who love what they do and who they do it with. And if you're not happy, like, change it. I've seen so many people stick in places or jobs that they're not happy with. And I'm like, dude, if you're not happy, like, you should change it, right? And I think, and the people you're around, I think that's the most important thing. And I think the third thing is just like relax, like, stuff will work out, and, you know, put in your best effort, but like, don't worry about it. Like, life is good, and stuff will work out. And, you know, I really think that ultimately happiness is just a choice. Like, you can choose to be happy or you can choose to be stressed. And there's all these surveys and experiences, you know, you go to like third world countries and you see these kids with like no legs and no arms, and they're like having the time of their life, right? And I've really seen just like, happiness is a choice, and you can choose to be happy or not. And yeah, choose to be happy. It's more fun.
Sweet. I love that it all resonates a lot with me. Yeah. Thanks for being on today. Really loved having you. How can people find you or Alchemy?
Yeah.
If they want to reach out.
Absolutely. So my Instagram is, I have all the social handles are at Nikilster, NIKILSTER. So that's my Instagram. That's my Twitter. That's my Facebook, Nikilster.com. So NIKILSTER.com. And yeah. And then Alchemy is, you can alchemyapi.io. alchemyapi.io, and that's our company.
Awesome. Well, this was another episode of Badass Asian Dudes with Nikhil Viswanathan, co-founder of Alchemy. And make sure to like and subscribe this podcast, and see you all guys later.
Thanks for having me.